I want to talk about life in the Briar Patch. We're in the middle of Anga, which is a month of intensive practice, and the Sunday talks are geared to it, the evening study groups, the session and practice day. And the theme, the stream running through this month of intensive practice is a wonderful ancient Zen poem called The Song of Awakening, which most of you have now heard, some of you haven't. It's about the briar patch and freedom. We know we're living in a pile of brambles and we want out. And we spend a lot of time scrambling out, getting scratched up. Doesn't work so well. We discover a spiritual practice and it gives us two tools. One is the mindfulness of walking, moving slowly in the briar patch and saying, oh, here's a bramble, look around it, see the brambles and work our way through them. That's one of the things it does. And another thing it does, it says, oh, there's a thing called having a quiet garden, the little Japanese Zen garden over here with a little trickle of water and a little moss and no brambles. And I can spend a little time there. And so I can have a taste of, no, something that's really not brambles and quite lovely. And these are both excellent things to do, to be mindful about living in the brambles and walking through the brambles and finding an oasis. After 35 years of this, I'm still in the brambles. There's still a lot of brambles. And at some point in there, you discover that although those are good things to do, this mindfulness of being aware of once in a while, especially if a bramble catches, you say, oh, right, mindfulness, here we go. And having an oasis of that's calm and rejuvenating, and, or at least maybe it's only the idea of it. Maybe we don't even really have it. We have the idea of it. Even that can sometimes either feels refreshing or just feels like, oh, but I'm not there, and then it feels worse. Either, with all of that, we're still in the brambles. There's still a very large briar patch. And eventually, if we're practicing Zen, the message of Zen gets through to us that really there's a lot of juice in that briar patch, not just a lot of blood from our scratches. There's a lot of my life is there, a lot of my experience, a lot of juicy briar patch. And there's maybe it isn't all about just escaping and cutting off and hacking away the briar patch. Maybe I need to find that something about the life and juice. Maybe there's something there in the briars themselves. And so we have this poem that says right up front in the first verse, the third line of the first verse says, the real nature of our ignorance is no other than our Buddha nature. Now, I spent a lot of years saying, okay, here's the briar patch of my ignorance, and I'll do a lot. I'll work hard. I'll use clippers and loppers and all kinds of, and I'll try not to use Roundup, and I'll do my best to leave that briar patch behind and get out of it. And then in those days, I met this poem, and I hated that line. I really hated this. The real nature of our ignorance is no other than our Buddha nature. Hey, I'm trying to get out of this briar patch. What are you talking about? What does it mean to say that this briar patch of my ignorance is no other, is included, is completely inescapable, not just inescapable, is a natural part of the world of truth, which we'll call Buddha nature. where we'd been coming through this before was the idea that, oh, as I am, I'm included in the world of truth, ignorance and all. And as someone said Wednesday night, so can I relax? You know, let Buddha nature do the driving? And how they put it, they weren't being flippant, but can I say, oh, everything's included, so what is the need to exert myself? What is the need for practice? As I said to that person, that's one of the great questions of spiritual practice. So you see, it's the question there in the middle of the briar patch that's really, really going to open doors and be juicy, saying, oh, everything, ignorance is also Buddha nature. I'm, you know, close the door on that. You don't learn anything from that. So much of my life is in the briar patch. That's where I'm going to learn. That's where wisdom is going to come up in the middle of the briar patch. It's very vigorous. Yeah. You know, if ignorance is also Buddha nature, you can't ignore it. That's the short form. You have to take care of it as ignorance, not as though it's... we're going to leave it behind. You have to take care of each thing as it is. I have the little patch of moss. I have the stone statue. I have the briar patch. I have a rock and a tree, an apple tree, and a baby. And I can't take care of them the same way. Each one differently. They're all Buddha nature, and each one has to be taken care of appropriately to the way it manifests Buddha nature. So, in what way? Is ignorance a part of Buddha nature? What do I do about it? It's either nice words or unpleasant words, depending on how we feel about it. But what do we do? How do we relate to that? And for those who are not long-time practitioners of this, ignorance in this tradition is something you're not born with. It's all of the ideas we come up with that turn into judgment and blame and shame and criticism and unlovability and all the ideas about I'm here, you're there, and it's a small pie, and I want actually a little piece of your share, of your slice. And there only are slices, it's a small pie. All of the things that lead us to divide things up and separate into separate little piles, like leave the briar patch. Is the only thing to do with the briar patch. That itself is ignorance piled on top of ignorance. And that's the chiefest problem with our ignorance, is not only do we have all this ignorance, not only am I in a briar patch, but I have ignorant ideas about what to do about it. You know, it's wrong. This is bad. They seal it in. We know that, for instance, if a feeling of shame comes up in you, and then you feel ashamed of having the feeling of shame, you know, you're stuck. You know, there's so much to unpack then. So it's the place where we pile and seal in the our foolish and sort of demented, shall we say, ideas. And a good word for ignorance is demented, actually, because ment is the mind, and D is off. It's like defiled, which is a great old Buddhist word that it just means off the path. A file, a field, it just means a path. So we think of it as defilement. So that's bad, that's good. No, they're just, what's the path of life and a true path of life, and what's off the path? So similarly, we could take ignorance as saying all of our demented ideas, all our ideas are somewhat demented because we keep believing in them. We keep forgetting that it's an idea. And we believe in it, and that's our demented life. All of it, even the briar patch, very much the briar patch, is included in Buddha nature, in the world of truth, shall we say. Leave out all the Buddhist words. In the world of truth, or the world of the universal flow of living energy, everything is included. But that's the problem with our mind, which then immediately says everything, this thing and that thing, and what about that thing? That thing looks kind of inert, but this one looks kind of active. I'll include that one, but not thing, but that thing. Oh, you're a person? Well, person's a kind of a thing. This is how the mind is going. But if we get our minds around this being a process universe, this is a process, a real complex, a whole whirlwind of processes, provisionally called Richard. There's not quite so much ferment in the pile of processes sitting down there, but everything is in motion. Everything is process. So our participating in the world of truth is not something that, or with Buddha nature, is in some ways a difficult concept word, because we tend to say, oh, I have some Buddha nature and I have all this delusion. No, we are all of the nature of the world of truth from beginning to end. But ignorance means, but I forget, but I don't know what that is, and I bend it around into things that are unclear. I create confusion. We are each Buddha nature manifesting as particular human beings, and as floor, and as flowers, and as candles. There is nothing else that is Buddha nature except you and me. So if I'm going to try to understand or relate to being part of a world of truth or part of Buddha nature, I need to find a way to approach the reality of it in you. Briars, you know, I can see you've got a few briars there. If you could get rid of them, it would be a little easier to see the Buddha nature. No, briars and all. Each aspect of this Buddha nature world, or this world of truth, needs to be cherished or taken into account as it is, in the way most suitable to it. Not only do I want to remember that Richard is not a Zafu, and take care of them differently. Mm-hmm. But I ought to do well to remember that Richard and Holly, even if they have the same last name, are not the same person. No. It gets really squirrely then. Same, pretty close there, even the same address. No, quite different. Quite different. And how do I take care appropriately, in the most fitting way? How do I establish a true relationship with Richard, with the candle, with the Zafu, with Lisa's foot? They can be very different. I won't put as much of my limited human energy into understanding my relationship with Lisa's foot, although there might be a lot of interest there. I don't know. But we're searching out what is a way to find a true relationship that exchanges some kind of truth or honesty between me and each thing. You know, when Aiken Roshi 40 years ago said, don't push that zabuton around with your foot, he was saying, take best care of each thing as it is. This great old Zen dictum. I take care of the zafu as it is. Now, I might actually use my foot because my knees aren't so good anymore, you know, but it's because of the most appropriate way I can relate to the Zafu, the most appropriate way I can relate to Jude today, bringing something real to it. And then we have some kind of honest relationship that's taking care of each thing as it is. And it was, I think, Soen Roshi, among many others, who have said, take care of the cup, not just carefully holding and picking it up. To take best care of the china, the porcelain cup, is to know that it's already broken as you care for it with great delicacy, so that when it cracks, you won't say, oh my God, how could that happen? The crack is, they're inherently fragile, inherently, in fact, already cracked. Just because I can't see the crack there yet doesn't mean it isn't somehow already part of the cup. So to take care of something as a perfect specimen of itself, or just as it is, includes the fact that it's a crack, or the fact that it's in a briar patch. But that's hard for us to do. What is a fitting way to take ignorance into account? Because that's where we live a great deal. What is a fitting way to take into account the iron bands we feel constricting us, or these things, what scratches and what seems to hold us back, or what squeezes our minds or leaves us feeling isolated? How do we take that most appropriately into account? Not by wearing hair shirts or saying, oh, it can't be changed, I must just accommodate, or I should toughen up, or any of those things. It's the search of a lifetime, really, because there's always a new briar. Oh, the briar patch will keep producing briars and maybe some blackberries throughout our lives. And so the question of how am I going to relate to what's coming up fresh in the way of my ignorance and delusions is interesting work of our lifetime. Our minds are natural expressions of this world of truth, of this Buddha nature. And the kind of human, natural human mind we have has an aspect, beautiful flowers of consciousness, in which we have some awareness, awakeness to this world, to this universe. And then we see patterns that we have a feeling for, and we call that beauty or meaning. These are wonderful qualities: poems, love, tenderness, insight. And the same mind has this natural capacity to get confused. It just is. Sorry, ignorance is not outside of the Buddha nature. Our mind sees and sees in discrete objects, which to some extent, a very important way, are there, and in another way are not really how it is. And we see isolation that is there and isn't really how it is. And we see sorrow that is there, and we see it as something that can't change, when of course everything is changing. We have a lot of trouble with fear, because once we are alive here, we don't really want to think of having to leave the stage. We don't want to think of, we have birth, we don't really like to think of death or illness. But if those things happen, are they me? This mind creates identities. It's got to. That's how you work. And it's in many ways a beautiful thing. And it also says, oh, look what I put in my little identity sack. All this fear and apprehension, and we have all these old experiences, and they filter into our current life willy-nilly. And all these confusions that we create in our mind are, in one sense, will-o'-the-wisps. They're bent versions of how things are. It's our tin ear. But they're very real in their capacity for harm and sorrow. They absolutely are. So we have this, our empty and illusory body is the Dharma body, it says in that poem. But this, the illusory body, in the sense that it is an illusion that I am as separate as I feel, but I do feel that way, and boy, think of the difficulties I can get into out of that. So a lot of the Buddhist teachings look at this ignorance, look at it, look at all the harm that comes up out of these bent ideas, and look at the consequences of that create more harm out of these bent ideas. Please keep looking. Please wake up to this. All of this ignorance and confusion are being asleep to the truth, asleep to how things really are, seeing only one side and thinking it's the whole thing, or one little part, seeing through a glass darkly and thinking that's how it is. So right here in the midst of the Dharma world, we have harm and ignorance and their consequences. They don't happen outside it. Nothing is outside it. Oh, there we are, of the nature of awakening, but not awake to it. To say that we're ignorant means we're asleep and acting on the basis of that dream. Because that's one of the really difficult aspects. So we have this apparent canyon between our briar patch and what we think of as the good life. And Dharma keeps saying that in itself is the first problem. The problem to address is this canyon, this sense of a canyon. That I am in a briar patch, I need to get out of and across this canyon, build a bridge across the canyon to something else, somewhere else. Like this, so those of you who get the New Yorker saw the good cartoon this week, I posted it, in which she comes into the living room where that guy is just sitting there going like this, and she says, obviously, he hasn't done his share of the chores in a long time. And she says, can't you be present later? Right. That one's, I like that one. That one's up. That's it. But our existence and truth are not different. We can only approach the whole truth through these particular bodies we have. And as this particular body, and as that particular body, and as today. As this poem says in another line, do not search for truth. It just says don't search for truth. It means don't search for truth as a thing outside you to go search for. Don't go searching for truth. And don't try to chop off illusion inside. Don't try to just hack your way out of the briar patch. The briars will keep on growing and you won't have learned anything. And there'll be a lot of messy, chewed up briars, and that's part of your own life that you're chewing up there. So it's a practice of healing the divisions in us, but not by saying, but the Daisy, I loves me not. This is ignorance. I'll put that up there. I like this one. I don't like that one. I like this one. I don't like that one. How do we heal the divisions in us by including our ignorance, our illusion, our attempt to divide ourselves up? How do we live as individual, limited beings in the briar patch that also not just limited beings in a briar patch, but actually participating in the whole expressions of the world of truth, complete as it is, as we are. We can't ignore our ignorance. And it isn't just about, oh God, I've got to go slog through some more of that ignorance today. You know, it's not a lifetime, a sentence of eating twigs for breakfast. That's how I feel sometimes. You know those cereals that are all twigs? Yeah. And am I relegated to eating those twigs for breakfast every day? And our life in the briar patch sometimes feels like that. But how do we know that we have to live in a world where we actually are responsible for our actions and have to take them into account. And cause and effect does not stop. If we don't eat our twigs, we don't, our body's not going to flourish, right? We know perfectly well that we're responsible for our actions. So why do we have to, why go through all this? Why not just say, okay, I'm responsible for my actions. I'm going to go try to pay attention to them. Give me some nice precepts and I'll go forth. Why do we need all this discussion? Because when we live in terms just of knowing that we are accountable because we're individuals and accountable because we're part of a group for our actions and our consequences, we get trapped in that. We get alone and divided in it. We despair of change. We start measuring how well we follow some particular precept, cutting ourselves and it up into little pieces, creating more ignorance in the process. Essentially, we're creating what we're trying to solve. So, feeling trapped, we yearn for freedom. Divided, we yearn for wholeness, outside of ourselves and not really reached. Dharma is this grand attempt to put what's divided and what's universal together into one world and into each single person in a way that it points a way. That's the Buddha way, is the way of putting together what is individual and divided, and what is universal and seems absolute and apart from us, all together in one, as a way that also is a way to do something, to live this particular individual life. A way to meet our suffering and meet our ignorance. How do we address this deep, deep problem of illusion? Well, it just, you know, it's not something to just sort of get depressed about. It's, my goodness, there's a lot of juice in that. How am I going to eat this as my life? And how am I going to refine my life by refining, starting where I am now, including where I am now? But because we're individual beings with a mind that says, here's one idea and here's another idea, and here's, you know, I have a left hand and a right hand, and they seem to go in somewhat different directions. They seem to be differently able. Although that's an illusion too. You know, I was left-handed until I, when I was about 30, 35, broke my arm really badly, and it was in, looked like a piece of plumbing for several months like this. And so I started to write right-handed. Lefties always have some use of our right hands because we live in a right-handed world. It's a world that has pushed us. It's good to be, in that sense, the minority and get pushed somewhere. So then I learned to use my right hand, and I kept on doing it. Once I got my left hand back, I said, you better not stop. Some things are left-handed, some things were right-handed. And 20, 30 years later, the handwritings finally look alike. They were quite different. You know, left-handed handwritings are like this, and right-handed handwritings are like this. So they didn't look anything alike. Over time, they've come remarkably close together. But we still think of ourselves as these, you know, I go this way and I go that way. So we can say provisionally, the sun has just come out. Well, you know, the sun was there, only I wasn't thinking about it much. Because I couldn't see it directly. So it wasn't there. So we tend to, we can address our ignorance and the whole problem of illusion in our life and the tangles of it in a universal or absolute side and in the individual side. Because on the one hand, we kind of have to say, well, here I am as an individual body. And I have to take care of it on those terms. And this is actually an expression of the world of truth, and I have to take care of it on those terms. And then somehow I have to remember that those terms are my provisional separation of something that isn't separate. From the sense of this universal life, see the Dharma truth of Buddha nature, and that we have no need for grasping in our illusions, that there's nothing we need to grasp at. And how? I'm an individual body. How am I going to do that? So we're going to find particular ways. We're going to say, right here in the middle of my life, I will do zazen. Right here in the middle of life, there's a small garden. Not somewhere over there that I go to and retreat from. It's actually part of my life of who I am, whatever it is that who I am. These things, right in the middle of the briar patch. Oh, the briar patch itself has beautiful, you know, the thorns are actually very beautiful, and the little flowers, and maybe there's a little scent and another little weed growing up in there. A moist bamboo is rampantly running through the briar patch and coming up. Seeing the universal nature of all things, finding some way to be reminded of that in ourselves and others, is to take that beautiful little garden over there and bring it back into our lives. It has some briars trailing through it. It's all right. Maybe it's surrounded by briars. It's just, maybe there's actually several Zen gardens. You pick them up or other kinds of beautiful gardens, in the midst of the same life, not somewhere else set apart. And so we say, do zazen as your life, in your life. And when you get up and go out, we don't say, oh, I'm going to take this aspect of mindfulness with me. No, I'm going to take this aspect of trying to be present in the middle of my life now, not later, and meeting what is present, what comes up here and now, as fully as I can, and take that with me. That's taking the sense, though it's generally so unconscious, we're not going around labeling Buddha nature everywhere, this sense of belonging and being part of something vast, taking in some way, some breath of that into our life. And then there's this very individual side where I am, in fact, not only, I am as an expression of the universal life. I have these two hands, and oh, did I just hit you with my oops? Better do something about that. Taking care of the errant actions created through our illusions means paying attention to the illusions and how powerful they are and how compelling they are. And if we don't have something, a way to do this, it gets overwhelming. Because if you don't have a sense of what you do about seeing how compelling and powerful these illusions are in our lives, they're just overwhelming. And then we either get overwhelmed in them or we turn away from them. So the whole Buddha way is there's all these practices, and we have the precepts, we have the Eightfold Path, we have Dharma talks, we have Zazen, all of this, we're saying, how will I go about facing and meeting and digesting this world of my illusions and the harm that can be created? Both by understanding it in a large way and also by having a sense of how to not keep perpetuating. Many of our traditions within Buddhism say that karma, the world of our actions, is in itself harmful, and we want to somehow transcend it. And Zen says, no, no, no. All our actions, including our generosity, all action is the world of karma, just the world of cause and effect happening in human bodies. So we have to learn to see how we misuse these things. I have hands. I misuse them by grasping and clinging and fending you off. To pay attention, best attention, to the ignorance of my grasping, to understand its futility, and to learn to open my hands, I have to have some help in tolerating feeling that grasping energy. Otherwise, it's overwhelming. Or the energy that goes like this. And if we just see that, we're likely just to fall into it. So we have Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That's what it means to take refuge in the triple treasure, is to say, oh, there are ways to help me see and really be able to tolerate a sense of what goes on when I grasp in my life and reject in my life and judge in my life and hunger and don't know how to feed in my life. I can actually afford to pay attention to these things as they are, with Sangha, with the teachings, with the practices of awakening, with whatever aspect of this grand tradition and other traditions we can use to help us actually see, not to run away from and not to deny and not to pretend, but to see the grasping and the denial, and that this is that out of seeing this comes opening our hands in generosity. Can't really happen without seeing them like this and seeing that this is suffering and that it is possible to open our hands. And you know what? I'm going to close it up again and do like this again and retreat behind walls, pulled up walls. And I'm going to have to see that it is that too happens over and over and over. Tozen saying, I'm hopelessly compelled by empty thoughts. That's over and over and over. We'll re-grasp and make a fist and pull it in and suffer. And over we will see it and say, oh, that's a hand. It's meant not only for grasping. It's a hand that can open up. It had a reason to grasp. What was that about? And it has a way to open and a meaning for that. Only by looking at it do we see over and over the futility of that grasping. And then we find that the peace of nirvana of doesn't mean everything stops. It means friction stops. It means things accord. It means we're at ease and in accord or in sync with who we are and what we are at this time. And then we say, oh, and I want it to stay that way. Mm-hmm. And it can't, because everything is endlessly changing. And we move. We do our best to let go of that, and I want it to stay that way, knowing that that will come up again. And the poem says, the myriad universes are bubbles in the ocean. The sages and saints are lightning flashes in the sky. But the perfect light of concentration and wisdom never disappears. That's the light of looking at our ignorance and seeing its nature and seeing what's a true relation instead of a kind of a false, ignorant relation to have with it. So that we're not not bound by it. And so then we can act in ways that are true and flow and express more clearly, more awake, the truth of life. Wisdom is only complete when the hand opens in generosity or compassion. That's the expression of wisdom. The other aspect of wisdom is saying, oh, look what I've just done. Oh, I can do this. Endless breath. That's our life. We can only do this life of breathing like this if we take into account and pay good attention to our ignorance, our life in the briar patch. We're all in there together. If anyone has anything they'd like to add or question, Holly.
I was just sort of thinking, you were talking about briar patch and that whole issue. And I understand what you're saying, but it's really hard when the briar patch is this sort of constant pulsing, changing, sometimes new stuff, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, sometimes melting away. Sometimes, you know, I mean, it's not
even the same briar patch,
it's
right?
It's never, you know, the whole thing about stepping into the river and it's never the same river. You know, I mean, it's. That kind of thing that makes it difficult to wrestle with, because it just changes from moment to moment.
Yeah. And we think that wrestling is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Because we our minds think in terms of either wrestling or with it, or lying down and letting it roll over you. And that's neither one of it. And somehow it isn't either way. But yeah, that is a very hard part of it, that it's endlessly changing. Very hard. What do you
think? The wrestling will be...